views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
This morning, Bahamas. It is Thursday, the 15th of April, 2021, and it's 10 a.m. That must mean you're on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. Remember, today's show is brought to you by the Department of Inland Revenue, and they're asking everybody to tune in and check out their Real Property Tax Forgiveness Program. Remember, the offer is valid until May 31st, 2021, and you can call 225-5778. That's 225-5778. Or you can contact them at rptforgive@bahamas.gov.bs for more information about the Real Property Tax Forgiveness Program. Good morning, Bahamas. In studio today, I have my guest co-host, Mr. Darwin Thompson, and a special guest, Mr. Cadell Algren, a youth pastor with the Methodist Church in the Bahamas.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about faith, young people, the brain drain, what these young people think is going wrong and going right inside this country. And we're going to talk a little bit of headlines throughout the show. So if you want to tune into the discussion, remember we're streaming live audio and video on guardiantalkradio.com. Or you can listen in on TV on Cable Bahamas Channel 969 and Flow Channel 612. Or you can download the Guardian Radio app for your Apple or Android smart devices and listen to our audio feed or watch us on our video feed right there on the Guardian Radio app. You can also text us on the Guardian Radio text line, 422-4796. 422-4796, and that's powered by BTC. Standard text rates apply. Or you can call us at 323-6232. 325-4316 or 326-4259. And so I have these two young men in studio with me today because I love hearing the perspectives of young people, right? I don't mind that I have to position myself as an old head trying to get into the minds of these young people. I'm desperate, right? I'm desperate to hear what young people have to say, how they want to get involved, what they think is going on. Because first of all, I can't be old lady-ish if I don't have a young person to play off of. I need somebody to give me some bright ideas so I can tell them, now listen here, child, that can't work. You don't understand how the thing go. You got to spend more time learning about the history. I can't do that if these young people don't bring me no brilliant ideas, man. So I'm always interested in what young people have to say and always, wanting to engage them in conversation about what's going on. Now, we're going to learn about who Mr. Algren is and what he's been doing. He's been doing some fascinating stuff. And then, hopefully, throughout the show, I can engage both he and my guest co-host about some of these things in the headline this morning. boy. I would love to get their take. And we're going to get into it on this top story in The Guardian, on the top fold. Take vaccine or face termination. And the subheading is Scott not afraid to be sued over restaurant policy. And then we have a second story in the business section that I just put down about the Tripartite Council showing great concern. Here we go. National Tripartite Council to discuss mandatory vaccines in workplaces. Listen, I just have to pause. To discuss, y'all just start discussing this? And let me tell you why I'm making a note here. See, for months and months, people have been raising concerns about the possible implementation of vaccine passports, of mechanisms that would restrict your movement and your ability to do things if you didn't fill the particular requirements of that mechanism. See, people have been complaining. Well, I was going to use that word, complaining. That's not true. Some people have been engaging steadfastly, attempting to bring this conversation to the fore. Some people have been insistently, consistently engaging the spaces they have access to, like social media, call-in shows, to raise concern. Now, for me, my concern is that the powers that be kept responding to these interventions as fake news, right? Like, people were raising legitimate concerns and they were constantly faced with this response, oh, that's just fake news. So here we are now. And every conversation the government is having seems to be about vaccine passports, but nobody actually uses the words vaccine passports. They seem to be about possible and potential measures and restrictions, right, related to whether you have the vaccine or not, but nobody's actually saying that this is what the conversation is about. And you see, but what I have been saying consistently for months is that it's the lack of clarity and access to information that is frustrating people. And every time somebody raises a concern, they're met with the response of, oh, that's just fake news. So here we are now, and it is Thursday, the 15th of April, 2021, and the National Tripartite Council to discuss mandatory vaccines in the workplaces. Surely they have been discussing this for months now, right? Really? Certainly. Surely they have been discussing this for months now. Not what the protocol for vaccine passports will be, you know, because I would feel uncomfortable with a government who told me that vaccine passports were fake news, but all the time they were having conversations about how they were going to implement them. I'd be very uncomfortable with that. But surely this body and other similar bodies that are stakeholders for labor, stakeholders for human rights, stakeholders for governance, have been having discussions about the legality of vaccine passports, right? How do we construct a national dialogue with the citizens to garner their opinions and their concerns about the virus, the vaccine, and the mechanisms we will use moving into the future to navigate the new world? Like, that's what I would have thought y'all would have been doing for the last few months, like 12 months, maybe, right? I can't imagine that yesterday is the day that y'all decided that y'all was going to talk about this. But let's get to another point. Another point is this. You cannot continue to have conversations like this without engaging the Bahamian people. The state and its actors and its partners. You see, civil society could be your partners if you would invite them to work with you. The state, its actors, and its partners need to construct a mechanism to engage national dialogue on issues of national importance. And certainly, the implementation of a vaccine passport is one of those issues. See, I can't even cast my opinion about it because we don't have enough information. You continue to leave citizens in the lurch. I hope that's the correct word. Please type in and correct me if I'm wrong. But you keep leaving us in this position where we either have to make decisions or endorse your decisions without sufficient information and without sufficient time to process said information. And this is problematic. This is problematic, and this is why people are so frustrated with these processes. Like I say, I'm not here to cast my opinion, what I feel about vaccine passports. I'm talking about the process with which we are implementing them or implementing them without saying that that's what we're doing. But there's a whole bunch of other conversations, like the conversation on the top of the Guardian this morning, that suggests to me that conversations have been taking place that the average citizen, and even forget the average citizen, special interest communities and stakeholders have not even been a part of. Anyway, these are things that I intend to get into with my guests and guest co-hosts this morning, right after I read these couple texts, guys. I hope you don't mind. So the first text say, when is the Ministry of Works going to paint the rest of the roundabouts? I don't know. However, if they ordered the paint the way they ordered the vaccines, we ain't gonna never know, sir. We will never know. And so here's what I need you to do. I need you to do this, to remember the obligation is on the driver to know where the traffic controls are, whether the proper indicators or signage is there or not. The onus is still on you, the driver, to know where it is. So encourage your other friends. See, I like how you consistent with it. You know, it's a problem that needs to be solved. Tell your friends too. Don't pretend like just because the line ain't there, I don't have to obey it. You know where the line is supposed to be, because that's where it is, whether you could see it or not. That's where it is. Adhere to it. And that practice, like if we practice that in the rest of our lives, that'll work, you know. Like with this problem we have with older men and women engaging minor children and people significantly younger in age than them, you don't need to see their driver's license to know where the line is. You know what I'm saying? You could look at that young girl and tell that even if she is of age, she's probably too young for you to be fraternizing with. You know? So we could practice that all over the place. Thank you for that text. And I had to read that text. Let me tell you why. Because that person has been texting for a minute, and I forget to read their text a couple times. Ms. Green, morning, too straight. Thank you, my F&M friend. Y'all better get not on the ground, because y'all like Just Road, but Just Road ain't waking out for y'all. Y'all better get to wake, because the people, some of these people really want to elect y'all, you know. But y'all trying dead hard not to get elected. And so please keep that note. I have a text here. Good morning, Aaron. One of the numbers to call for Guardian Radio is 325-4259 and not 326-4259. Did I read 326-4259? I am very sorry. It is 325. Oh, it is 325-4259. I am sorry because my sheet is wrong. So if you've been calling 326-4259 and you have not been able to get through, try 325-4259. I don't know how we made that mistake, but we're going to clear it up. Thank you, texter. That's why I like to read these texts. Sometimes they're not on topic, but they give me the information I need. Kermit, I see we have a caller on the line. Caller, you got 30 seconds on the clock.
How you doing on the clock?
I'm good, thank you.
Good morning, it's Sparky here.
Yes, Sparky.
You know, I listened to you talk about the vaccine and stuff this morning.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you remember clearly, you heard me call in yesterday on one show about a company in the Western District of the Island. Had instructed their staff that if they didn't go down to Loyola Hall yesterday at 1 o'clock to take the vaccine, they would not have a job by Friday.
Wow.
Vaughn said he was supposed to check into that to find what happened.
Yeah.
Now, I got a call yesterday from a young person, the mother of a young person who works in a place.
Mm-hmm.
And because the young man...
Person, the young person,
job.
Of losing their job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He went with the crowd of employees down to get his injection. I just got a call before your show came, coming on this morning, from the young man's mother. At 4 o'clock this morning, he went to work, and she was called about 5 o'clock to come and pick up her son, because he's not doing well, he can't drive. She picked him up and took him home. And a little while ago, I got a call back, and I asked, well, why did you take the boy home and not to a doctor or ambulance? So she thought it could be right. She said the last thing she knew, her son totally feels like his body is shutting down.
So they went to the hospital, right?
I don't know. I'm trying to find out.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Sparky. Thank you for making that known. And so I will advise, I'm sure the mother is busy taking care of her child, right? But if you do have an adverse reaction or you feel that you're not doing well after you've taken the vaccine shot, go to your nearest clinic or hospital. Contact somebody. Let them know where you are, how you're feeling. Make sure that wherever you are, you're accessible, right? So if you're at home and you're waiting for somebody to come check you, leave the door unlocked so they could get in. Just in case you're not feeling well enough to get up and let them in. If you can make it to the hospital, do not drive yourself. If you're not feeling well, ask for some assistance getting yourself to the hospital or the nearest clinic. The next important thing is this. The government is asking people now to report all incidents of adverse reactions or moderate or beyond responses to the vaccine. Let us avail ourselves of that. I see a number of people are using social media to document their personal experiences after taking the vaccine, and a number of us appreciate that, right? Because what that is about is that a lot of us don't necessarily trust formal mechanisms to disseminate all of the information, right? But let us also use the mechanisms that are available to us. Don't just post on social media a documentation of your experiences. Communicate with the state mechanism that is documenting this information and make sure that they have it. Another friend recommended when you're going to take the vaccine, if you could take a couple of days off, arrange to take a couple of days off. Inform someone that you've taken the vaccine. Document your responses to the vaccine on an hourly basis, if you can, as they change. And stay in touch with someone in case you need to go to the clinic or to the hospital, right? Yes, we're frustrated with the state, but let us use our common sense and use the mechanisms that they have created, right? Let's continue to try to use them. And thank you very much, Sparky, for sharing that information. You see, let me get to my guest. Good morning, Mr. Cadell Algren. How are you?
Good. Good morning.
So I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself, but before you do, I heard of Mr. Cadell Algren through the social medias, right? I saw the story about a young Bahamian going on a mission trip, right? It's to spread his faith through the world and to do other things. And I grew up in the Summer Methodist Youth Camp and spent my summers going to Eleuthera to teach like a summer camp, Christian summer camp, and vacation Bible schools throughout the country, right? Took me to Inagua, took me to Andrus, took me to Eleuthera, had good time. Even took me to Florida, right? Had good time. But I'd never met somebody who really traveled the world, right? Sharing his faith. And so when I met his mother, I was like, boy, I'm going to schmooze my way into this interview. And his mother was kind enough to link me with Mr. Algren to talk about his experiences as a youth pastor and doing mission work. And I want to ask you, is missionary okay? Is that still an acceptable term? Or is it another term for what it is that you do?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for welcoming me to your show today. It's such a great opportunity. You said my name is Cadell Algren. I'm also, I just consider myself like a Gen Z follower of Christ. I'm engaged with ministry in the Bahamas Conference of the Methodist Church. And I would say everyday missionary is a good term to use. I'm not too special in that regard.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I love that Gen Z follower of Christ.
Yes.
Right? I like young people saying, like, look here, this is how we follow Christ, you know. Like, you could follow us if you want, because we only follow in Christ. I love it. I love it. So how did you become a youth pastor?
Well, my story started at the age of 12 when I became a Christian at Global Village Methodist Church. But I didn't really recognize God's call in my life until 16, after many church hopping all over Nassau and realizing how damaged the church was. That's when I decided to become involved in changing how damaged I saw the church.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. So how did you become an everyday missionary? See, like, I know how I got into youth work, right? Into Christian youth work. I was like five, and my auntie was like, you come into the island with me? And she packed my Georgie bundle, right? And I went to Camp Simonette, and I loved it, right? I think I get beat up, I get eat up by like 75,000 mosquitoes.
Oh, yeah.
And when I came home, I had a smile on my face, and my mother's like, yep, we're wrapping you up next year and sending you back, right? And I did it from five to 18, you know, and I really loved it. So how did you begin doing like missionary work?
Well, for me, when I became a Christian at the age of 12, it was quite a fiery experience for me because I didn't grow up in a necessarily a Christian home. My parents went to church, but they didn't. That was like funeral and weddings for them. Right. So when I became a Christian, started that fire, I started to do work in my church and on the island, small short-term missions trips. And at the age of 16, there was a lay minister training course that I started in high school. And I finished that being the youngest lay minister, youth pastor in the Bahamas Conference of the Methodist Church.
Wow.
Yes.
Super cool. You know, I used to think I held that title because, you know, when you go to summer camp, you run the camp. Now, you could be, like, I was a junior counselor for most of my time there, right? But you're required to participate in the programming.
Right.
You know? And then even give little sermon and thing.
Yes.
You know? And it's amazing, in that setting, how open young people are to that. You know, to being a part of their community in that way. There's so many things that we can learn from these Christian experiences, and I'm going to say this, whether you are Christian or not, whether you sort of come out of that Christian experience deciding you don't want to be a Christian, you can't deny the things that you learn in that space. That's why I think these spaces are so important for young people. So a little later on the show, I'm going to ask you to tell us about some of your missionary experiences, right? But what does faith mean to you? And how important do you think faith is for young people?
Well, yeah, for me, faith is the centerpiece of my life. It put everything together and makes the world make sense as a whole for me. My relationship with God gives me access to real purpose, for sure, and how important it is for faith for young people. Funny you should ask that. This question I'm especially empowered by. Faith as in Christianity in my generation is, to me, very extremely important. The purpose I spoke about that God gives me, as I see lots of young people and young adults living without this purpose, they don't really know what they're supposed to be doing in life. I sympathize and have empathy for those that have even been let down by the church in some regards. You know, not just church, but as in faith, organizations in general.
Yeah.
Right.
Darwin, what does faith mean to you? Because look here. In fact, let me frame this. My good friend Darwin was in an accident yesterday. And so first, I just want to say to that person that caused that accident, you're not going to sleep well until you're honest with yourself and the authorities about what happened yesterday.
Right.
This ain't no curse or anything. This is some advice. These things eat on your conscience. And even though you think you may have pushed that away to a corner of your mind where it won't bother you, eventually it'll come out. Because you see, I need my boy Darwin to have faith that he could put his wife and his children in his car and go on the road and move safely and freely through the town. So I want to ask my friend and my guest co-host, what does faith mean to you as, you know, as a young man?
Right. Well, Aaron, as Ms. Allgreen would have suggested, many youths are losing faith in the church, right? Myself being one of them. While I haven't lost faith in my belief in Christianity and Jesus as God, I've lost my faith in church. And granted, what that means for me is that faith is my walk with God, not my walk with the church. Yeah. While the church is the body of Christ, and he says, you know, you should go to church, you actually go to church. He also said, where two or three are gathered, I am there. That's a church. That is also a church. Mm-hmm. So if me and my wife and my daughter decide to huddle together and pray on a Sunday morning, that's our church. Right? And our fellowship is the work that we do through human rights, through volunteering, through working in the community.
Yes.
That's what it looks like for me personally. Right? A lot of older people tell me that that makes no sense. That makes no sense at all. If you ain't spending 7 hours in church a week, you're making, you know. And that also causes me to lose more faith, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're creating your own rules for this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where two or three are gathered, I am there. That's what he said.
I think it's important for older Bahamians and for the church to hear this, right? That young people are not opposed to faith. They are not opposed to God. They're not opposed to believing in something. Right, but the church no longer remains an institution or a space that they can believe in.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And so they trying to find balance between church and God.
Exactly.
Right? And but there is this desire to be in communion. Like I think that's important for people to realize as well, that younger people do have a desire to be in communion. Kermit, I'm not sure if something went wrong with the mic just now, but to be in communion with other people, right? But there is this feeling that y'all don't want us here as we are, right? Like you have to change to come into the space. So I want to ask you guys, and start with Cadell, this question. How do we stem, see, we call it the brain drain, right? Like how do we stem the brain drain and encourage more Bahamians to stay home, come home, or contribute from abroad? Right? Because I don't think the problem is what we think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think we think the problem is young people say, oh, I can't make enough money. You know, or I can't do what I want to do here. But I don't think that's what it is. I think that young people feel like they say they can't make it, like, I could get a job, but y'all ain't gonna pay me. That's not what it is.
Right.
It's that they don't feel like they could come as they are in their own country. Right, and so they would rather go somewhere where they feel like they could be who they are.
From from my perspective, sorry, Ms. Hallgreen, I just
Mister,
this is important to me, right? Specifically, the brain drain aspect of things. I've seen that word used by a lot of radical groups that have recently come out, especially against migrants. The brain drain. A part of it, yes, it is the when I get on the job, am I being paid the amount that I'm worth? Am I going to be sitting with my PhD at a ministry job only able to make under $60,000 when if I move to a different country, I can make over $80,000 with my PhD? Am I going to do that? Also, am I going to come to a country where when you get into an accident, somebody is just going to drive off after they cause that accident, right? Am I living in a country that is conducive to my growth? Are the people around in the positions of power willing to move when I come to occupy the space that I've worked hard to get into? They're not going to. You're going to come and they're going to tell you, sit there and work that very menial, very not worth the amount that you are worth job, and wait until we tell you that you deserve to move up to get maybe a couple $1,000s more, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And
Cadell?
This is a question I've really been trying to navigate in recent days. I was having a conversation with a politician I'll leave unnamed recently, and I asked him, honestly, does he see why most Gen Z and younger millennials don't come back to the Bahamas? Because that question really concerns me. I think we need more policies slash changes in our country that reach the people, especially younger generations, to see Bahamians staying for the opportunities that are here. Because, I mean, I've worked in a job where I wasn't paid well, but that's not, say, the deal breaker for me, you know?
And that's what it is. I don't think the money...
Exactly.
And I don't even think the upward mobility or the is the deal breaker either.
Right.
I really think it boils down to some very basic things. Like empathy.
Yes, definitely.
Like respect. And when I talk about respect, like, can you act like you see me?
Exactly.
Yeah. Right? Like, we've developed these cultures that are sort of intergenerational cultures, and then we absorb them in our own culture, in our own generation, right? Where we can render somebody invisible. Like literally, like, you don't exist. And I think it's in those spaces, right, that young people are making the decision to not come back. Like, I grew up, let me tell you, I don't know if y'all understand this, right? I grew up at a time when you knew the power was going off every summer. And you know it was going off multiple times. Like, you just knew, right? In fact, I went to boarding school in England for 2 years. And I was in England entirely for 3 years. And if I tell y'all, the power only went off three times. In 3 years I was there, twice in one spot. One was a snowstorm. Right, and then one was some accident at the power station, and then one in London, like, it was another massive accident. They had an explosion in my building, and the power didn't go off. Right, so I'm a person who grew up understanding that your light bill can cost the same as your mortgage, and your power still ain't gonna go off, and that didn't make me decide that I couldn't live in this place.
Right.
That those aren't the things that make people leave. Okay. So let me ask you this. Do you think young people, young Bahamians, care about politics and governance?
Yes, I think I think of course we care too much sometimes. That it can seem like many of us are depressed with the options available to us. I know that I personally struggle with that.
Ah, okay. So tell me about you caring too much about politics.
Well, I personally don't like very conservative politics. I see all three prominent parties emphasizing views that are almost like archaic. And especially to this survival of, you know, the progression or the progressive nature of democracy. And, you know, the second thing I would say that I definitely don't favor our old English Westminster system of government. That prevents, I mean, at times, even ministers from being vocal about their disagreements.
Right. Well, now, I can be honest with you, the only thing that prevents them being vocal about their disagreements is integrity. Because you could say what you want with the understanding that you may have to pack up your things and go home. Right. And it's okay, because you did what you knew you ought to do when you knew you ought to do it. Yeah. But I agree with you. The system and the political culture that's been generated around the system is problematic. Yes. Yeah, but that's plenty of my feelings. I don't really want my feelings as much as I want to know about your feelings and then some of the feelings of the texters, right?
Right.
So let's get to the text line for a minute, entertain some of these questions. I got a text that says, "Morning, we are being dictated to by the CDC, WHO, IMF. And they bully third world countries. There is an agenda here." Well, I mean, if you've been following global politics for the last 100 years, you would know that larger countries bully smaller countries. Yeah. I would be interested to have access to the communications between the government and these supranational organizations. I couldn't imagine why we as a people couldn't have access to them. And as soon as I figure out the Freedom of Information Act, and which parts are working and which parts aren't, I am going to request access to said information. I got a lovely text here. It says, I can read it just like how it write. "Good morning, Her Excellency Lady Green. I love your show. Just want to encourage you today. Whenever someone tell you that you look stressed out, tell them I am blessed to be stressed. And whenever someone tell you that you look disappointed, tell them, I am so anointed to be disappointed. And when Satan comes near you, tell Satan, not today, Satan, go your way." Look here, thank you for that encouraging word from comedian Reverend Joseph Roll. Look here, I just want to say, thank you for that word. Absolutely. You know? And I don't know if Thursday is going to be like a faith kind of day, like where we talk about religious things. I like it, though, to roll into the weekend. But I want everybody to remember that, because you are anointed to be disappointed. That's a serious thing because you had something to look up to, look forward to expect, and you could still hold on to that, you know. You could still hold on to that. Kermit, I see we got a call on the line. Can we go to that call? Caller, you are on the clock. Hello, good morning, caller. You still there?
Hi, how you doing?
Oh, I am good, thank you. How you do?
I'm doing well. This is Aaron Green.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and you guys, how y'all doing?
Good, good.
Good.
Yeah, I'm Aaron. I wanted to say this, right?
Yeah.
It's amazing how the Bible is written, whether it is past, present, or future. And a lot of the churches don't realize and observe that there are some fights and things that are supposed to take place before Christ comes and for his people.
Okay.
So my point is this, right? You have Michael, they'll stand up for the children of thy people. Christians never mention that. You have Elijah shall come before the great and dreadful day of the Lord. Christians don't mention that. You have another one where it say the angel who could speak the everlasting gospel. So my point is that is a lot of things are supposed to take place before these things happen. And, you know, especially the Christian church, they focus more on the commandment and the message. And I think the Seventh-day Adventists, they focus more on revelation. What I want to say is to lighten your mind and the young gentlemen in the place.
Yeah.
Just remember now, when you read the Bible, there are some things that are supposed to take place before the coming of Christ. And you will know, because when that person comes, whether he be Elijah, whether he be John the Baptist, whoever, you will know by them, by the word of God, what their purpose is and what they're supposed to do. So you all, I'm enjoying the show. Thank you so much.
Yeah, man. Thank you very much. Thank you for that word.
Thank you.
You know what I find is important? Well, I had a texter the other day, and I got to find that texter or somebody to have this flat earth discussion, right? Because... because I'm interested in how and why people believe what they believe, right? I ain't here to fight you down on what you believe. I want to know why you believe that, because that is where, you know, where the fascination, that's where you are. And that's how I learn about you. And so I want to have this conversation, right? Like the point that you made about what the Seventh-day Adventists believe versus what the sort of traditional Christians believe. I want to talk about that because that is really interesting. But more interesting is this idea that you have to be a theologian, right? Like you have to be trained to understand the full extent of what the Bible is intended to do, right? Let me put that there. Thank you, Texter, for that information, because we're going to have a lot more conversations like that. I got another call on the clock, guys. Caller, you live.
Well, godly day to this dark universe along with you all.
Man, listen, wait. Is everything okay?
Yeah.
Okay, because you used to say godly universe.
Yeah, well, see, you still present God to the world or to the universe, but still the majority of people in the universe in darkness, and that made the universe dark.
Ah. Man, look here. What another interesting perspective, man.
Yeah. But, go ahead.
No, you go on. You go on.
What I want to ask your lay minister, of course, any of those gentlemen, including you, why is it that when it comes to the archives, they only have the Methodist Church and the Anglican Church record of the dead in the Bahamas and the marriage in the Bahamas. No other churches has their record in the archives.
So you're saying that the Methodist Church and the Anglican Church keep their own records?
No, the archives has it.
Right, but I'm asking you, is it that the Methodists and the Anglicans ensure that they document their own records and they give it to the archives?
Well,
or is the archives responsible for gathering the information themselves?
I'm not sure, because I've asked one of the authority of the archives, why is it that only those records are there, those two churches' records are there, and she couldn't tell me the reason, as if as though she don't know the reason.
Well, she may not know. Now we can find that out.
Yes, very much so, because, you know, I think it's wrong whereby you're looking for a record, you know, and they doesn't have the archives, doesn't have it, the church doesn't have it, and, you know.
Hold on. So I was just informed that churches do keep their records, right? Now, that makes sense to me. The question is, who is responsible for getting it to the archives, eh?
Well, I don't. The church keeps it because of I try to get a record from the church, you know.
Which church, Bremen?
Church of God, Liberty Valley Corner, which my dad had buried in.
Well, that may be about the size of the church and the capacity of the church to keep records. We talk about the Methodist and the Anglican, they're much larger churches, and they have they have financial resources available to them.
They're very established.
But the thing is, not even the Roman Catholic Church
don't believe that.
I say again?
Don't believe that.
Well, this is what she told me. She told me only the Anglican and the
In the archives.
In the archives.
Yeah, but trust me, the Roman Catholic Church keeps its records and its document. Don't watch
but
nothing.
But what I'm saying is probably not others. There. The way she has spoken to me, as if as though the only two churches that have record in there is the
Methodist and the Anglican.
Right.
Well, look here, Bremen. What a project. What an opportunity. So a couple things I see here right now, right?
Uh-huh.
The first thing is this. Is that, did you know that the Christian Council is a political lobby organization, right? So let's get them to lobby the government, right? To create a unit to focus specifically on engaging all of the churches, helping them to build or create a proper documentation system for births and burials and things going on in the church.
Yeah, marriage, right?
Right, and marriage, and then to create a mechanism to get that in the archives, because this is very important. What you're talking
very
about is very important.
Right.
Right? Yeah. This ain't about, the church. If this is the space where the information is, we got to collect it and document it. Bremen, look here. I'm going to get back to you on this, because this is a great idea and an opportunity. That's what I see there, an opportunity.
Uh-huh.
But look here, I got another caller on the line.
Yeah,
I got to go. Thank you very much.
Right.
Caller, you're on the clock.
Hi, good morning, Miss Erin Green.
Good.
I'm your guest.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Still there? Oh, I'm so sorry we lost that call. Okay, I got two quick texts, and then I got some hard questions to put to y'all young people who like to be around the place just looking like y'all could do anything. Good morning. Could you please check with your newsroom? Question mark. Michael Scott is a part. I'm just reading this text. Give me 3 seconds.
Sure.
Their text, that story is on the front of the headlines. I mean, he speaks and says that he's, Michael Scott speaks and says, or implies or infers that he has ownership in this company. Check out The Guardian today, top fold. Mm-hmm. It's right there. I just didn't really want to get into the story, because truthfully, human rights advocates should be all over this. Human rights lawyers should be all over this right now.
Exactly.
The labor unions should be on this right now.
Right.
Because this is the sort of thing that requires national level discourse.
Right.
You may
talk
to all the workers about this.
Yeah.
This is a big deal. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't take the vaccine. What I'm saying is that people should not be forced or coerced to take the vaccine. I also was supposed to take a moment this week to highlight the discourse between Atlantis and Bahama not talking to each other about the vaccine and their employees. And I thought it was slightly disrespectful the way that they engaged each other and ultimately the Bahamian people about how we ask people to take vaccines. Mm-hmm. Come on, people, this matter is too serious to treat in this fashion. Anyway, I got a caller on the line. Caller, you on the clock?
Hello, you can hear me?
I can hear you now. Glad to have you back. Still there?
Yes, good morning, Ms. Green.
Good morning. How are you doing, 52?
Yeah, I'm sorry for calling. I just want to, and good morning to your guests. And so the pastor, I know, the Bible always said the strong shall oppress upon the weak, right? Now, this is and the people who like to hate on me for speaking the truth, right? Everything is fake news, but that's all right. I was speaking about scientific dictatorship and medical slavery for years now, right? So that's good for us. We will see it And this is the way forward for the rest of the world. But most people can't see that you'll be forced to take it because of the biosecurity paradigm. Just the other day on Google, they had Operation Lockstep. I never tried to juxtapose Operation Lockstep with the coronavirus. But there is Operation Lockstep is total control. They actually show you where they'll be scanning people's brains for thoughts. All right? I'm telling you, just go and read it. I can't get too intricate on the radio, but go ahead, first of all right?
Thank you, number 52. It's something to look into. You see, we're going to take a guy like number 52 and say, this guy is so out there. He's so wild, these ideas. But let me show you something. First of all, people, it's 2021, right? Let me tell you how this world works. When you're on the cutting edge, right, you keep going, you keep pushing. But you always, always have to keep in mind the ethics involved in what you're doing, right? Like, it's great to discover things. Yeah, we humans, God put us on this planet. Yeah, we have the right. We even talk about we have the right to exploit and we have domain, but we rarely ever engage the ethics, right, around this supposed right to exploit. When you're on the cutting edge, right, you're where other people aren't. You're out ahead of the crowd. And so, yeah, a lot of us don't understand what he's saying because he's way out in front of us. And see, those people who are way out in front of us, right, they're surveying the landscape and they're raising the concerns. See, in capitalism, we forget about ethics on the cutting edge. Mm-hmm. It's about the excitement of discovery and the potential of becoming rich.
Right. Yeah.
But on the cutting edge, there's ethics. And in every conversation that I hear 52 engage in or issue he tries to raise, what I hear him calling out for is for us to pause and consider the ethics involved in the decisions that we're making. And do we have enough information to make these decisions for ourselves and for other people?
Yes, yes.
Right? Like, I'm not telling you whether you should or you should not take the vaccine, but I'm asking you to talk about it in a way that doesn't suggest or suggest that somebody is wrong for holding their opinion on the matter, or that creates an environment that is coercive, right? And makes people feel like they have to do a certain thing to look good or to be perceived as right or proper. Y'all don't understand the extent to which people feel like they don't belong in their own country. Mm-hmm. The extent that young people feel like they are criminals just for being who they are, which is different from what they see around them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? And I sort of see it as an activist because I took my steps out so boldly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And so I see the fear of others who won't step out that boldly.
Yeah.
But we act like it ain't there. Mm-hmm. And that's why I want to, in fact, y'all forgive me, I run on plenty just now, but I'm going to have Mr. Al Green and Mr. Thompson back on to explore these issues, to talk about young people and faith, because what we're asking everybody in this country to do right now is to have faith in a vaccine program that is so new that it can only be used for quote-unquote emergency use, right? That's what we're asking people to do, to have faith in science, in things that they don't understand. Right. And when we do that, we're going to practice empathy, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to practice empathy, and we're going to practice respect and mindfulness and create an environment in which we can ask people to make the most difficult decisions without making them feel stupid, or like I mentioned those two hotels the other day, with such coercive and abusive language, like we don't have to force our employees to do the right thing. They're just going to do it. Come on, people. We are better than this. We are better than this. And I can be honest, when I become prime minister, you got to be better than this to live in my country.
Yeah.
That's what the rule could be. It ain't going to be about money or status. It's you got to live a life of a certain ethical and moral standard to live here. You got to be nicer to people. You got to stop bullying people. But anyway, I got two more minutes left. And I got this question for Mr. Al Green. And like I say, I'm bringing you back, Mr. Al Green, because we ain't finished yet, right? And here is the question. You get to create two new industries. What are they and why?
Oh,
Well, I would focus on Bahamian production of goods. I really believe the future for our economy is slim, just depending on tourism alone, mm-hmm. and that U.S. imports are, you know, taking Bahamian jobs away. And I would say that would be the focus of those two industries. I wouldn't be able to say the specifics, but that would be the goal.
Mm-hmm. Manufacturing and processing of goods.
Yes, definitely.
Boy. See, I know you's a family island person, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so here's the next thing. Do you think we would be in a better position if we allowed family island imagination,
right?
The power of the lived experiences of family islanders, right? Mm-hmm. To determine and drive development in the country. Island. What do you think about that?
Yes, I definitely think that, family-oriented community, inclusive, taking care of one another type of attitude. If we had that in Nassau, if that trickled down to Nassau, where we are so individualistic and selfish, we would have a lot more success.
Absolutely. Boy, look here, that's that music. Quickly. Last three texts, our country lacks healthy and structured debates, and major decisions concerning the whole population takes place in silos. The media and citizens have to be able to ask authorities and politicians alike, do you really believe XYZ, or why do you believe XYZ? Even if when hearing these questions, their body language reveals it when their lies won't. Thank you, Texter. Quickly, Aaron, 52, all right with me, but he is not way out in front because he does not know the biggest lie of the spinning globe Earth. Thank you for texting in. I'm going to take your number, Texter. I hope you don't mind. We're going to talk. And good morning. It's not right. Well, no. I'm going to tell you right here, Texter. And to Bernice Johnson, we had a technical difficulty. Nobody drop her call intentionally, okay? We don't do that here on The Guardian Radio. That does not happen, right? There's a real reason. It's either technical or there's a protocol breach. Don't watch nothing. These people here believe in justice here. Thank you for texting in and, giving Bernice some support. But that's not what happened today at all. Anyway, Bahamas, it was my pleasure to host Mr. Cadell Algreen, who I'm hoping to have back on in the next coming weeks, and Mr. Darwin Thompson, my guest co-host today, to talk a little bit about faith and life in the Bahamas. It's 11 o'clock, and that means Lee Van Miller and Unleashed is up next. Have a great day, Bahamas.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.